This is Build and Analyze, a weekly news and discussion show about the world of iPhone, iPad, iOS, mobile web development, and more, sometimes coffee. The show is hosted by Marco Arment. He's the creator of Instapaper.com, and by me, I'm Dan Benjamin. Today is January 3rd, 2012. This is episode number 58. I'd like to say thanks to our two sponsors, MailChimp.com and Shopify.com. We'll tell you more about them as the program goes on. We also want to mention that bandwidth for this episode was provided by VidMeUp, a free service that allows you to create your own video site, your videos, your branding, VidMeUp.com. Check them out. Happy New Year.
Thank you. You too.
Congratulations. Having a boy.
Thank you. Wow, you're up to date.
Very up to date. I have some name ideas for you.
Oh, good.
In fact, I have just one, and it's the perfect name for boy. Actually, it would have been the perfect name for my boy, but my wife rejected it for our first kid, which was a boy, and the second one turned out to be a girl. Won't work as well as a girl's name, so I'm going to give this to you and to the listeners. You ready?
I'm ready.
Cash. C-A-S-H, Cash.
No,
given Cash Benjamin sounds a little better than Cash Arment, but doesn't matter. Run with it. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, Cash Benjamin is pretty good.
So, yeah, it would be great. She said no. She said, you can't name him Cash. I said, how about the middle name, Cash? No, you can't do that. If we have another boy, you can name the second one. So we have a girl. So I couldn't use the name.
Well, so I
give it to
you.
Well, but he's nothing like a Cash. I'm glad we didn't name him Cash. It wouldn't have worked. But it's not too late for you. So this is really cool. You had this cake. I'm going to put this in the show notes.
Oh, the cake.
Such a cool cake. So hold on. I'm going to get this linked up.
Oh, man.
All right. It's in there. So there's pictures. This is your wife, Tiff, or Tiffany, as she's known on the internet, on her blog. There is a picture of this amazing looking cake, and it's so cute. It's got a little, it's, you know, inside when you cut into it, it's blue, and there's a little blue boy, baby, little, what do they call this? Little things you stick into the cake, not a candle. It's a little plastic thing you stick into the cake. It's got a picture of your wife's belly getting bigger as the baby's growing. It's got a little pin on it. This is exciting. It's a big deal.
Yes, I completely agree. I was not so thrilled about having a cake party.
Why?
To reveal the surprise.
Why not?
I just don't like that kind of attention. Like it felt like an imposition.
Well, right now it's still on people. It's still about your wife,
like,
though, right?
No,
let her have some fun.
Yeah, no, I know. I thought the idea was a little weird of inviting people to a party. Under the premise that it's so important what our baby's gender is that you need to be really excited and anticipate this giant revealing.
Oh, it's just an excuse to have a party.
Right. So once I learned that was really the reason, I was okay with it. But yeah. Anyway.
It's just an opportunity for, you know, but it is exciting. And I bet, you know what, if it had been a girl, the party would have been just as good.
Yeah.
I got to tell you something. Girls are easier. Sorry.
Great. Thank you.
They're easier. I mean, well, already she's only 4 months old. She's way easier than the boy.
Right. Wait till she's like 13.
Yeah. Then it, I think it flip flops.
Right. I think it bounces out in the end.
Yeah, it probably does.
Yeah. So that's happening.
It's exciting. Getting close.
Yeah. It's only like 4 months away.
It's crazy.
It's really quite close. Oh boy. So anyway,
y'all set, y'all prepared, y'all ready?
No, not of course not.
No,
not even close. We don't even have a bedroom yet because the
you don't need one. You really don't.
I guess at the very beginning you probably don't, but I don't know. I guess I'll find out all this stuff.
Yeah,
still not buying a minivan. That's out of the question.
The main thing you need when you're having a baby, you need some diapers, you need some wipes,
and a lot of coffee.
A lot of coffee. And you know, I mean, really, that's about it. That's about all you need. Everything else you get when you figure out when you need it. I mean, certain things, you know, obviously you need the thing to put into the car so you can get the baby home. But other than that, once you're there, you can run out and get it.
How about John Siracusa Arment?
That's the thing that's great.
Just one word. Like, no, like, well, you'll pick a different middle name.
Right.
John Siracusa Arment.
Be awesome.
Maybe a hyphen. That's pretty cool. To put that on the list of things to consider.
Yeah, put that down. It works. It's got a ring to it. It's Italian.
Yeah. My Italian side of my family would be very happy about that.
They'd be thrilled. They would be thrilled. So how was your New Year? Do you have anything special?
Yeah, I played a new board game that I got for Christmas called Power Grid. And it's a pretty good game. It's one of those BoardGameGeek.com games.
Is it like Jenga?
Not even close.
Huh.
But it's a really good game. I recommend it. It's called Power Grid. It's from Rio Grande, the same people who published Puerto Rico, which is, my favorite overall board game.
Power Grid by Rio Grande Games.
Yeah, very good.
I've got a link.
The whole family enjoyed it. Like, and I think this is the first relatively complex game that we just went into cold. Like, none of us knew how to play it, and we just learned it by reading the instructions, not by, like, having somebody teach us.
I'm sorry, there's a picture in the Amazon, on the Amazon page, you know, people can upload their own images.
Right.
There's a picture of what looks like a family playing it, and the family looks completely bored out of their mind. I'm going to try to get this URL in the show notes, but...
Oh, you're right. Yeah, the red shirt on the left?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I just send you the... That's a great picture.
Oh, you gotta definitely out put that link to this.
No, I've got it.
These links work in the show notes.
Like, I think
if they're real permalinks, where like if you just go to it, it'll work.
I'm gonna test it, and if not, I'll find a way to get it in there. But you need to see. By the way, the people ask what the show notes are. 5by5.tv/build/analyze, and this show is /58. All of the links, everything we mentioned, including the pictures of Marco's baby's cake, are there. Check it out. Brought to you by HelpSpot.com, the best darn help desk software ever. Yeah, this picture is working. The link will work. So that will be in there. It's so bad. I mean, I'm with people who are driving their car. They're like, damn it, I can't see the picture. Well, just go to the page and see it. But you were saying this was...
We had a lot more fun than they appear to be having. Yeah, we played it like four times. It was so good. Like over the course of the weekend. It was like it's a repeat game, so it's pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah. It's like an economic strategy game. Pretty good.
Listen, since we're talking about pictures and having fun, I'm gonna give you one more link. This is a photo of me after my first kid was born. You can see I'm holding a trash bag. It's a white trash bag that is completely full of diapers.
out of curiosity, how many days worth is that?
That was about 24 hours of diapers.
Used? Or
yes, yeah, used.
So, wow.
And I'm standing next to a pack and play on my right, and on my left, you can see on the ground is a little, what's called a bouncy seat, you may be already familiar with.
I think I've heard of that.
I think this is about, let me see here the date. Yeah, this is about 2 weeks after the baby was born, approximately. And I had already lost over 10 pounds because I was not eating. I was frantically taking care of the baby and driving places to buy things. So hopefully it won't be quite as stressful for you. But that's
well, you'll find out because you're probably...
Yeah, we'll talk about it.
I would imagine we're probably not going to take a whole lot of time off on the podcast. If any, so
yeah, I mean, it'll be your call, how much you want to do it. I hope you can do it, but you know,
right. I think, unless Tiff gives birth on the day of the podcast, we'll be able to work it out pretty well, probably.
I like how, oh, you pasted the link. I was going to say, like, the chat room already has the link of the picture.
Oh yeah.
It's going to be great. Well, I think this is great. All the people who aren't expecting or don't have kids in the audience, they're almost turning off the show right now.
You know, I think at this point our show probably has to have the audience of our show probably has to have a very high tolerance for off-topic conversation at this point. Do you think that people who are still listening would have gotten this far without a tolerance or listening to a topic that doesn't quite apply to them?
Probably not. Probably not.
We got a question from Patrick with no C, Ragnarsson, or Ragnarsson, or Ragnar's son. I don't know. How do App Store refunds work? If you know where to click in iTunes, it's relatively easy to convince the iTunes support that you should get your money back. Who is paying, Apple or the developer? What's the refund statistics for Instapaper? Great question. So, had I been prepared, I would have pulled that up immediately. Because I wasn't quite prepared. I'm going to do that now. But the way refunds work is pretty straightforward. It's very similar to, I believe, to credit card processing, where the broker, in this case Apple, takes pretty much no risk and doesn't eat the cost of pretty much anything. The developers just get decredited, or I guess debited, one copy worth of sales for each refund that's processed. To give you some idea, let me see. I don't want to give you my numbers because that's...
No, that's secret stuff.
Let's see. That number divided by that number. All right, so for yesterday, I had a refund rate of 0.31%. So that's pretty good, actually. That's pretty low. And let me see. I don't know if there's any way for me to give a sum of this column, but let's see. No, there isn't. There isn't a good way to get a sum of this quickly. But yeah, you do have refunds, and you'll see in your sales reports, you'll see like a negative one here and there for units, but it's very, very rare. Like as a percentage of your sales, it's minimal. I really have never heard any developers complain about their high rate of refunds. Most people, like most customers, don't even know that you can get a refund for an iTunes purchase. I guess the people who do it are the people who always threaten to in the App Store reviews and the nasty support emails. I'm fine with that. It doesn't really bother me at all. In fact, I think I've said this before in the show. I would love it if I didn't have to answer support email at all. And if every support email that came in, I just had a quick link that somebody could go to that would just say, you know what, sorry, I really can't help you. Here's a link to get a refund and, you know, sorry it didn't work out. You know, kind of like a nice version of the No Soup for You. Like, and they could even keep the app. I don't really care.
Yeah.
The last thing I want to do is just deal with, like, at the end of the day, I'm getting like $3 from each of these sales. And so if it's going to take somebody's time, like an hour of time, to email back and forth with these people to diagnose some weird bookmark installation bug with their Firefox extensions, it's not worth it. Like, I'm going to lose a lot of money on that. And I kind of feel bad taking people's money when there are things that could go wrong for them that I really can't do much about. And so it'd be easier just to have that quick refund option. But unfortunately, as far as I know, there's no way to do that. But some people do get refunds. There's some links buried somewhere. I think you have to like go to the sales receipt and like report a problem or something like that. I don't even know. I don't think I've ever done it. But anyway, that's how it works. Developers get decredited for those sales. And it's such a low rate that it really doesn't matter. So how are you?
Good.
Good.
Getting over a little cold. You'll enjoy that too as soon as your kid is able to walk. They will, if somebody in Brooklyn, downtown Brooklyn, where you live, has a cold, your kid will get it and you'll get it.
Yeah, we actually, as part of our New Year's travels this year, we went to a family gathering where one person was getting over a sinus infection.
But that's not contagious, is it?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
And it was already like day 10 of it and like no symptoms were remaining. So, but you know, we were worried like, oh, should we not go because Tiff's pregnant? And then we realized like last week we went on the New York City subway and didn't think about it.
Right.
So like, you know, whatever could have possibly been caught from this little tiny interaction at this family gathering with a person who had a sinus infection 10 days ago, pales in comparison to...
to like 30-second exposure to
the two-minute ride we took on the subway.
Yeah.
So we aren't being too paranoid about that stuff yet. Got another good question from Double B. That's actually his name. Double, capital B. Terrible name. Man, what were those parents thinking? Question is, can Marco discuss how he delineates between work time and play time? I.e., when does he decide he's done enough work for the day and it's relaxation time? That's all in quotes. Well, not all of it. You know, parts. Does he set certain goals at the start of the day? And once he reaches them, no matter if it takes shorter or longer than expected, does he stop for the day? I'd be interested to hear his thoughts on this. So you've worked at home more than I have, Dan. Do you have a good way? You seem like you are better than anybody I know at not working during non-work time, like at having set work hours that you appear to follow very strictly.
Oh, it's the trick I have for that is really, really easy. And in fact, you're doing it too. Have a kid. Because when your kid is hungry, believe me, and you're home, you will take care of your kid. That comes first. The screaming 3-4-year-olds demanding food prevents work from happening. That is my trick. Before we had kids, which is really before you and I ever talked, I would, especially when it was my own business, my own thing, whether it was something I was doing on the side, or full time or whatever. And even in some cases, jobs where, you know, as you mentioned, I worked from home. It was very, very, very hard for me to not work at any, I mean, even on the weekends, there's lots of people I know who like the weekend hits and they're like, I don't work weekends. I was always working. I always cared. I cared a lot. I still care, but I care about my kids more. So that was the only thing that ever broke me from it. So I can't really take any credit for being good at it. I think I was horrible at it. I think I was, it was really, really tough for me. And I mean, there were times when I had gotten so stressed out from the job, from just spending so much time and from not disconnecting, or even, you know, at the end of the day, you're like, well, okay, you know, your wife's like, oh, let's go, you know, let's watch a movie or something, watch some TV or just talk or whatever. I'd be like, okay. And then there I am with the laptop, you know, so I was never really disconnected. Then I'd get an email at, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock. This is down or something, you know, some problem. You got to fix now. Yeah. You're fixing it for 2 hours. It's like there was no break.
Yeah, when you're managing servers, you never get a break.
Yeah, or you have an application that has a bug that somebody discovered, and they're, you know, the production department is trying to get things ready to ship, and they need it for tomorrow morning, and now they can't work. They were going to pull an all-nighter. You need to fix your code or whatever. I mean, it's nerve wracking, and there's no way to. So I was horrible at that. But having kids, you know, at about 5 o'clock, my boy needs to eat dinner. And that's about the same time, a lot of the times these days, especially that our baby, you know, my wife needs to help her get down for bed or whatever it is that goes on. I don't even know. I just show up. I hear kids yelling. I go downstairs. They're hungry. I start cooking something. So it's easy. And then on the weekend, you know, this is the amazing thing is that I mean, it changes. It kind of goes back and forth at different ages and time periods. But your kids will go back and forth between thinking you're the best person in the world and your wife is the best person in the world. And it may last for
and
a week.
You want to win. Or you want to like take over and be the favorite, right?
Not necessarily. But when it's your turn to be the favorite.
It's going to become the worst parenting podcast.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It already is. It's already happened. But what happens is that your kid thinks that you're the best person in the whole world, and they look at you like, can you play with me? And you look over at your laptop and there's like an email, and then you look over at your kid and the kid's like, let's play, you know, Batman. It's an easy decision to go play Batman at that point. So, you know, I think I think that's the only thing that is saving me from completely doing what you claim that I'm good at.
Separate. And then how do you set up with your family that you're going to have these work hours where you are at work, like when you're recording a show, you obviously, I mean, unless you're really good at like hitting mute and going and playing Batman no. and coming back, I don't think you've been doing this during the show.
No.
I wouldn't put it past you. You're pretty good with this stuff, but you know, how do you set up like, okay, I'm going to play with you during the evening, you know, full time. I'll be the present parent then. If you're working at home though, how do you say during the rest of the day when you're during like the quote work day, I'm going to stay in this room and work and I'm not going to be bothered by, you know, a screaming kid outside the room or some really fun stuff happening outside.
I guess that part, it does just take discipline, but it takes support from your, you know, from your significant other, your wife, as well. I mean, my time with my kids, I say kids, I mean, the baby's still with my wife most of the time, but with my boy, who's four, most of that, you know, that's from the time that he wakes up, which is 6 a.m., to the time that I basically go to work. Now, this doesn't mean that I won't maybe have a laptop out and intermittently check email or something, but for the most part, for the first two or so hours of the morning, that's just me and him hanging out. Breakfast and other things together. Then I sort of go to work, which basically means I go to my studio here and I, you know, I'm working with, you know, it's not a closet anymore. But it's a room and it's upstairs and I shut the door and they don't come up here and they don't bother me. And that took several years of training to just basically leave me alone so that I could work because I tried it other ways and I would just get very distracted and I ignore what's going on down there and they don't, you know, I mean, there have been times when I've been working on something and I've heard, you know, my son ask, you know, when's daddy coming? And he'll say that a lot, but it, you know, I would love to go out there every time he says that or every 20 minutes, but what does that teach him too? You know? So I mean, it is tough. You just have to make a decision that yes, earning money and supporting this family is important. And we have a really good quality time before and after work and sometimes at lunch and on the weekends. And if I didn't do that, I wouldn't have a business and we wouldn't live in a house and probably wouldn't even have kids. So it's a trade-off, but the rest of the time they're with my wife. It's, you know, so it, she's not, you know, not a bad person to be around either. So it's not, you know, it's not like we're ignoring him or them. So I feel good about that. I feel good that that they're with people who are, you know, trying to have fun with them and doing fun and interesting things. But it is hard. You just have to do it. I'll tell you what, it was way harder. It was way, way, way harder when he was very young, when he really needed so much. And now he's older and he can, you know, there's more activities that they can do and there's more things that they can do and like potentially be dropped off somewhere to play. And it's not just a constant, you know, stuff that it was when they were very, very little. But it's hard, man. It's hard. I can't wait to see how you handle it, though. You'll be an expert in no time.
I don't know about that.
You'll be given advice.
I'm pretty bad at it now, like about kind of work hours. So I mean, so to answer.
So I was going to ask you, what do you do? What is your? Give us an example. Walk us through your day.
Well, here's the problem. I don't really do anything. I don't really distinguish between work time and play time.
It's just one thing, right?
Right, and
all blends together.
I bet this is really common. Both among people who have remote work situations and who work at home just for themselves. And I think in my case, I've never worked at home for somebody else. So that's, as you mentioned with the office discussion last week. Was that last? Yeah, that was last week.
I think it was.
That's a good show. As we mentioned about like on then, like I don't know anything about that situation, about remote workers for somebody else. But I do have, you know, my situation is, I work at home for myself, and that I think that really it's very easy to overwork yourself or to become a workaholic that way, in the sense that and I don't know, you know, workaholic is kind of a weird word. I guess what I mean by that is to let work take over too much of your life in a way that is detrimental to you. And I don't think my work is a problem right now with my family set up, but certainly once we have the kid, and especially once the kid's old enough to want to play with me, I'm going to have to set up like work hours specifically. But right now, there really are no work hours.
Does your wife mind if sometimes, you know, you wrap up dinner and then maybe you want to, you know, go work a little bit? Does she care?
I mean, you can ask her. I don't think so, because that's kind of how it's always been.
Is she in the chat today?
Yeah. Like even back when, you know, when I was still working at Tumblr, I would always come home and work on the internet on side stuff. I'd write my blog posts. I would, you know, code. I'd work on Instapaper, even though that wasn't my job yet. So I tend to do my best work at night, like between about, you know, 9 o'clock at night and 2 a.m. And that's, I know that's probably going to have to change once the kid comes. And I don't really know how to fix that yet. I guess I'll figure it out as we go. But you know, this is a problem that I really want to solve well once the kid comes, because I want to be present. You know, I don't want to be the guy checking his smartphone every 5 minutes and responding to email on the couch when the kid's trying to yell at me about Batman. You know, I really don't want to do that. I'm really going to make a conscious effort to be present. And I hope, I mean, there's a few things that make this easier. One is that even though I have a laptop, I still use it like a desktop. It's basically a desktop that I can bring with me on vacation very easily.
Right.
That's how I use it. But it's still like, I do all my work at my desk. The monitor is big, the separate keyboard and mouse. Everything's plugged in, wired Ethernet most of the time, except right now because the house is destroyed. But for the most part, like, I use my laptop at the desk. I don't take the laptop and work on the couch during like family TV time. I've never gotten into that. I like the ergonomics and the scale and the setup of a full size desk to actually do work at. And so that helps a little bit. But I bet smartphones, and before that, Blackberries, which shouldn't even qualify for the word, probably made this problem worse, in the sense that people were able to be connected to work. You know, not just connected to the world of wonderful information, but actually connected to work. Right.
Anything that can come to them electronically, they're now tethered right to.
And they can get alerts from and everything. Even then, like, I don't use push notifications for anything on my iPhone except my servers being down.
Mm.
And I have two levels of being down. There's, you know, a server is, it's basically a warning level and an error level. And warnings, I don't even check on a, like, I'll check them when I go check the errors to see if there's been any recent warnings, but that's it. Errors notify me via email. And the only thing that I get a text message or a push notification for is if the site is unreachable or if the site is throwing error messages. That I will get a notification for.
So it's easy for
if
you
it's
to
anything
to,
else.
I was going to say, it's easy for you to know that any kind of notification that comes across, you know, it's bad news.
Right. And so, like, that's why I keep my, and this probably sounds ridiculous to people who get a lot of notifications. Like, if you have notifications turned on for like Twitter followers or likes on Instagram or anything, this will probably sound crazy to you. I keep my phone on the nightstand next to my head at night on loud, on the loudest mode possible, because on most nights it makes no noise whatsoever. Nothing happens. No notifications come in. If any notification comes in, I know it's important. It's either somebody calling, and the only people who would call me in the middle of the night would be like some kind of family emergency or something. Like, I know it's either somebody calling, in which case it's probably worth noticing, or it is text messages that my site is down. And so, you know, that I can do that because I really kind of conserve my receiving of notifications. You know, they really mean something as a result. So, you know, anyway, that's a big aside, which I guess is what the show is comprised of or composed of. I never know how to use those right. I can look up every time I want to use comprised or composed, I look up on the dictionary app, and I still can't figure out which one applies to the sentence I'm writing. Yeah, so I just avoid it. But anyway, so I do want to be present. And I think I've been trying to practice that recently, because I really, like, manners matter a lot to me. I don't want to be that guy who's always taking out his phone while we're hanging out. You know that guy?
Is that bad to do that?
Like a long time ago, probably like 2 or 3 years ago, I think it was Scott Simpson. I'm pretty sure it was him. If it wasn't, I'm sorry to whoever it was. They made a tweet, I'm pretty sure it was Scott, saying something along the lines of, like, you're cool to me if when I see you, I never see your phone.
Because it's sort of rude. It's rude to pull out a phone.
Right.
And you know, and you're supposed to be spending quality time with the other person. And then here you are, you know, pulling out a phone. It's sort of dismissive.
It really is. And like, you know, that even just when talking to somebody or going out to dinner or something, even taking out the phone then, like, it really bothers me. If you see me take my phone out in the middle of anything, it's because it vibrated in my pocket and I want to see if I need to pay attention to this thing or not. And usually it's just a calendar reminder for the event I'm already at, so I'm fine. but if it's anything else, like, I want to know that. And all I do, take it out, glance, put it back. Oh man, did Aaron Lidman just find that? Oh my God, that's great. Look at that.
Okay, so Aaron Lidman in the chat room has the...
This was from June 2010, and he
just found
it. Scott
Simpson tweet, which will be in the show notes. My new standard of cool, when I'm hanging out with you, I never see your phone ever, 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 period.
Right, so...
That's in the notes.
I saw that, and I really, really appreciated that. I liked that a lot, and I remembered it, and it stuck with me. All those things mean the same thing. And so... You know, think about that. Try to do that. Like, try to be cool to Scott Simpson, because he's pretty cool. And if he thinks you're cool, that's awesome. So anyway,
know what else is
I'm
cool?
I'm hoping that'll all apply to kids and everything else.
Yeah. Oh, it will. It definitely will.
Getting back to the topic that's off topic.
I was just gonna say, you know what else is cool is being a dad and being able to put your kids first and being in a position where you can actually do that, and you're in one. You have that flexibility to work when you need to work without going to your boss. And that's a really privileged position. When my first kid was born, I did not have that privilege at all. I was working for the man, as you say. And
I always say that.
Yeah. And I didn't, I mean, I was able to be flexible to some degree in, you know, the hours that I worked. I was CTO for a startup in San Francisco. So the fact that they were a number of hours behind me meant that I could sort of time shift things. And that was nice because I had sort of long mornings to help out and give my wife a break and things like that. But I still had to be accountable at a minimum of 8, but usually more like 10 to 12 hours a day starting after that point. And I had people reporting to me, so I had to, you know, respond to them. And I was, you know, it was very stressful. So for you, even though you might not look at your work as being work versus not work time, it might just take a little bit of a shift of your perspective to say, well, I really enjoy these, you know, breakfast time with my kid, or I really like doing an afternoon playtime with him, or whatever it is that you like to do. You can strike with the exception of getting the dreaded alert that your server is down, which is a problem that you can solve a different way, actually, then you can really structure things. So you're very much in a really good position to be able to, you know, frame things the way that is conducive to how you want it to be. You know, you may find that, like, you can't get anything done unless you have a block of 4 to 5 hours, even though you know, as a lot, we've talked about this, the way a lot of developers work and designers and other people too, you know, the concept that, like, you sit down at a desk for 4 to 5 hours at a time, you're not coding 4 to 5 hours typically. You might work, we've talked about working in cycles and working more at some point and less, feeling more creative at one point and less creative, you know, but your day you might write some code for a few minutes and then take a break. But for you, taking a break is, you know, reading some news or checking some email or doing something else. It's just shifting that mental focus, and then it allows your mind to sort of solve whatever the coding problem is while you're away, and you'll be, oh yeah, that's how I want to fix it. You go back to the code and write. I think that's a normal pattern for a developer, but you may find that to get into that zone, you know, that you need an hour to just get to that point. or you need 30 minutes to get to that point. And if there's a kid crying, you're like, oh, what's he crying about? Is he all right? Oh, he's just hungry. Okay. Well, and then your wife's like, what? I can take care of the kid. You don't need to come out and help. You're like, but I feel the same way you do when he cries. I want to go see what's wrong with them. You know, I don't like the idea of my kid's crying. Plus, I wasn't that focused, you know, and then you wind up like realizing the day is over and you didn't get anything done. So that's it. That's the risk of, you know, that comes from loving your children. You know what else I love? Shopify.com, the internet's most elegant, customizable, and scalable hosted e-commerce platform. You get your own online store, accept credit cards, use your own domain if you want. We're going to be selling the new 5x5 t-shirts, and the Snob Blend t-shirt is going
That's
to happen.
Awesome.
Did I tell you that?
I didn't know that was going to happen.
Oh, it's going to happen. I'm trying. What we're working on right now is we're working on trying to get it down to, you know, the more colors you have on your t-shirt.
Right. It makes it impossible to print.
Yeah. It's difficult to print and can be very expensive. I mean, technically, yeah, you could go to a print shop and they'll print out however many colors you want them to do. You just, you know, but it just becomes more time consuming, more expensive. So we're trying to distill it down to like the fewest possible number of colors. So we're working on that. But of course I'm going to use Shopify to sell all of this stuff. They have 100, more than 100, I think, now, professionally designed templates. You can make your own if you want, which is what I do. I just use like their base thing, and then I put it in my own HTML and CSS. So really, you can make it look exactly like your own website. And they handle all the PCI compliance stuff. You don't have to worry about any about that. And I mean, they have stores on there that are selling like millions of dollars a month. So it's no big deal. So here's the special for our listeners. You get 3 months free. Usually they just give you 30 days. This is three times that. You just use the code 5x5. And you go to shopify.com, put that in. 3 months free. You can start selling stuff immediately. So check them out. Longtime sponsor. Love those guys. Happy New Year to them.
I think it's also worth pointing out, like, at your job, you might not, like, it might not be in your control how much you're on call. And this is probably more like a Merlin show kind of problem. Like, if your job requires you to be on call 24 hours a day to, you know, for your job servers, that's a pretty crappy place to be. And, you know, not the job, but, you know, the situation's a pretty crappy place to be. And you might want to look into changing that, you know. Maybe ask people at your job, like, hey, look, 24 hours on call is terrible for anybody.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe we should hire like one or two more people and split this up a bit. And, you know, but maybe you don't have that choice. And in which case, maybe you got to decide what kind of job you want. I've always been very, very guarded of my, well, that's terrible phrasing. I've always very carefully guarded my family time. Even when I didn't officially have a family, even when it was just me, you know, I at least during my entire working life, I at least always was in a relationship, and I always had hobbies, and I always valued being able to sleep at night. And so I've never permitted myself to get into a situation where I felt like I was being taken over by a culture of workaholism from my employer. And that has occasionally caused problems with my employers, but it was always, always worth it, because like, and I'm not saying like if there was some big deadline and some big project or, you know, some big problem was happening, I'm not saying I'd walk out the door at 5:01 p.m. every day, but I wouldn't tolerate that always being the case. You know, like if, yeah, I'll come in and work on a weekend or a holiday if something's really, if it's like a special case, if it's like some real emergency happened, or, you know, something's a really big problem and it doesn't usually happen that way. Yeah, sure. I won't leave my job stranded or, you know, leave my responsibilities unattended to. But if it's one of those places that always kind of seems to be in a crunch, you know, like, hey, for some reason, everything's always way behind schedule and they always need you to work late hours and you always need to be on call constantly or you're always fixing fires, like that's a sign of deeper problems in your job and the organization. And despite what a lot of people think, that is not startup culture. Like it is not a given that startups are always like that. And I say this now having worked for two startups, not including my own. And now I guess I have my own. By the way, what does the word startup mean exactly? Like, does it just mean a business that doesn't make money?
I think that's a really good question.
Because when do you stop calling a company a startup? Like, is it when they're profitable? Because in that case, Instapaper was never a startup. Or no, maybe it was for like 3 months. Or I saw some news article the other day that called Twitter a startup. And I thought that it was like, Twitter's what, like 6 years old now? Is it really still a startup? It's like 6 years old. It has like half the world using it. I mean, not literally, but not that far off. Is that really like, when do you stop using that word? Anyway, another sidetrack, pop the stack. All right.
It's a valid question. It's a very good question.
It's so weird. But, you know, it's very important that a startup or any kind of small or young company, oftentimes the culture presented to you from either the media or from investors or from your boss is such that it's like a huge crunch time, and it's like the Facebook movie where you're like up all night eating pizza, coding like crazy, and that doesn't really happen. And I mean, it does occasionally, but like in general, that's pretty unusual. And the places where that does happen, that's not cool. It's not normal. It's dysfunctional. Like that's like your workplace is abusing you as an employee. They're asking way too much of you, and you should not tolerate it. And because, you know, usually jobs in our industry, like the programming jobs for employees, are usually just salaried. They're not hourly. So you're not making any additional money by working all those hours. And they kind of bait you with the promise of startup equity and, oh, you're going to make a lot with stock later. And the fact is, if you look through, there was a great post, I think, by JWZ. Was it him? Anyway, there was a great post by somebody like 2 months ago. I'm pretty sure it was him. Jamie Zawinski, is it? Yeah. Anyway, about how like startups, like the whole glory that our industry and that our investors and our tech press spout about, like, oh, startups are great and you work your butt off all night long and, you know, long days, long hours, always crunch mode, weekends, no holidays, no breaks, nothing. But you'll become a millionaire with stock options. And in reality, you hardly ever do. Like the percentage of people who receive stock options as part of their pay, you know, compare that to what they usually make with those. And here it is. There you go. Thanks, McDonald from the chat room. Yeah, it is JWZ. And I'm pretty sure that's Jamie Zawinski, but I'm not positive on the last name pronunciation details. Anyway, boy, his site is hard to read. Sorry. If only there was a product to make this easier to read.
yeah, we got to keep open.
Yeah. Like stock option, and I guess now, hey, we found ourselves back on topic. Stock options are gambling. Stock options are really like a mail-in rebate. You know, like you treat it like you're never going to get anything out of it. Like if you buy a product and it comes with a big mail-in rebate, assume you will never receive that rebate because chances are you won't. That's why they work. Chances are you'll forget to send it in. And for people who do send it in, chances are you might forget one of those little barcodes, or you might have some weird eligibility exemption or eligibility failure somewhere. The whole reason why everything's sold with rebates at retail is because almost nobody sends them in and actually gets them fulfilled. So it's a great way to claim to have a sale without really paying for one from the manufacturer standpoint or the store standpoint. So anyway, the problem with stock options is that usually, you know, in most cases, they're not worth that much. In many cases, they end up being worth zero. And in many more cases, or I don't know, I don't know how, whether this is more common or not, but usually they're worth something, but, you know, it may be a few $1,000s. You know, so if you take stock options and as a result of taking them, you take a salary cut, or rather you accept a lower salary than the market would otherwise give you, if you do that, you probably won't make up the difference. And if you're taking stock options and then tolerating ridiculous working conditions like constant very long hours and constant crunch time, or like 24-hour on call for everything forever, you're probably getting ripped off. And you know, it might not be your boss necessarily. Your boss might be getting ripped off too. It might be the culture of tech startups where that says this is normal and that says that you're all going to win. Or it might be the investors who say, no, you need to do this by this date with this many employees. Although in reality, that's pretty rare. Usually, investors want you to spend more money, not less, and to hire more people, not fewer, but because they want more of your company. But you know, you shouldn't. This is all a very long way of saying you shouldn't tolerate the ridiculous culture of overworking in startups because you're probably getting ripped off. Like you may think you're gonna have some ridiculous great payout later with stock options, but in reality, it probably won't happen. If it does, great, congratulations. You know, that's awesome. But it probably won't for any given company. It almost definitely won't make up the difference enough. If you make anything from the options, you probably won't make enough to make it worth tolerating crap. So my policy has always been, whenever I've negotiated a salary with the companies I've worked for, which have always been kind of startup-like, if not true startups, I've always negotiated a market salary. Like I will never accept a lower salary just because it's a startup, ever. I never have. And you shouldn't either. Not you, Dan, but you know, you, the audience. You shouldn't either, Dan.
People in the chat room are very curious to know if you are an S-Corp or an LLC and why.
Right now, Instapaper is an LLC. It's never been a corp. First it was sole proprietorship, now it's LLC. Why is mainly because I talked to a lawyer and an accountant, and they both said, do this. And I said, okay. because honestly, that's probably what you should do too.
Yeah, I would.
For anybody asking this question, the answer is talk to a lawyer and an accountant.
And I'll tell you what, Marco, you're dead on here.
And have them do it.
Yeah, don't listen to us as far as what we are and don't say, well, Dan and Marco both have an LLC. I mean, I had an S corporation while I was in Florida because the laws about LLCs there had changed. They were not not quite as good here in Texas. It's an LLC. But don't say, well, Dan and Marco are LLCs, so that's what I'm going to do. Like really do the crazy thing of paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars to find a good attorney and CPA, because to be totally honest, if you screw it up, it's a huge pain later. Really bad news. Just pay some money. If you're going to spend money on something, don't, you know, we talked about logos or everything else. You got to have the business stuff lined up. You got to have that lined up. That could wind up really hurting you later. Especially.
And also, you know, more generally, like, it took me a while to accept the idea of paying a professional for something that I could probably wing it and do it myself. And in this case, like there's all sorts of, you know, self-directional things and, you know, how to create your own LLC or S Corp, and you can do your own research online to try to figure out which one you should do, or even full corp, even C Corp, who knows. It took me a while to accept that I had to pay a professional to do something like that.
Because it seems like you could fill out, you can read, you can fill out the forms yourself, and you can do it yourself. And in fact, that's what I did with the S Corp myself a number of times in Florida. It really is typically easy enough for you to like fill out a form and send in a small check and completely screw up your business and do it wrong.
Right. And despite what listeners of your show with Merlin might think, I come from a very modest background. You know, I really, really don't come from a position of lots of wealth in my life and in my family. So the idea of paying somebody a few hundred dollars or more, depending on how far you go with it, to for something that I could just kind of stumble through myself was really foreign to me for a long time. And in reality, what I've learned now running this as a quote real business, is that, you know, part of being a business is you're going to have to eat a lot of costs for things that you could do yourself, mm-hmm. or things you think are BS, and you're just going to have to eat it and deal with it and move on. And the sooner you realize that, the sooner you can get back to running your business and doing what actually makes the money come in, rather than worrying about every little thing that could go out. Like, to give an example of this, I used to always do my own taxes. You know, now I have an accountant do my taxes. I even used to do all my own like individual accounting even after I had him do the taxes. Now I have him do the accounting also, because if I screw it up, I don't want the stress of that, and I don't want to deal with it. But even other things, like New York has this this new tax that is a few years old, that the state doesn't fund the city metro systems enough. So there's a tax basically on every county that is served by any of the city metro systems, where you have to pay, you know, a few hundred to a few thousand dollars a year. So as of, I think last year is when it started, I had to start paying another couple thousand bucks a year in tax. Oh, well, too bad. I have to eat it and figure out how to cover it, because that's just how it is. Like, there's nothing I can do about that. There's no weird like accounting things. And that's why this kind of goes back to the Lodsys thing, which has been pretty quiet recently. But back, you know, the Lodsys patent troll, which is, Lodsys is such a sham. It's, let's be real and say Intellectual Ventures. The Intellectual Ventures patent trolling, if somebody gets an attack letter or a threat letter saying like, hey, you got to pay us this relatively small amount of money or we'll sue you, that'll cost you millions of dollars. Obviously, the earlier statement applies, where you should really talk to a lawyer about that first. But the reality is, if the lawyer ends up telling you paying them is easier and cheaper, just do it. As opposed to, like, you know, if you fight on something like that, you're going to cost yourself so much money. It's you're going to end up losing in the end. So, you know, when you run a business, you have to kind of realize, like, you're going to have to pay these little taxes along the way.
Yeah.
Paying professionals, paying for BS legal things, paying for insurance that you don't think you need but the state requires, like things like that. Like, you're going to have to do stuff like that, and you just have to accept it as a cost of doing business. Just like, you know, retail stores have to accept things like theft, which they call shrinkage, hilariously, as part of doing business for them. Like, similarly, you got to expect that you might get sued by somebody. Like, if you have a bunch of employees, one of them might sue you for something weird. Like, you just have to expect that, and you have to always build in, like, you know, enough of a buffer in your profit to cover weird things like that that, you know, you just can't do anything about. Just like, you know, earlier the refund discussion. If people get a refund from Instapaper, they got my program, they used it, and then they got it for free. They got away with it. I can't even afford to care. This also applies to piracy. You know, piracy is a big problem for any software or media. You know, my app is pirated constantly. My app is pirated within days of every version's release. And I used to try to fight it and, you know, try to have like a piracy detection in the app that reports back to the server whether it's pirated and the server refuses to give it any information. I stopped caring about that about a year ago because I just couldn't. I couldn't keep fighting it. It wasn't worth the time. And the reality is, people are going to pirate my stuff. People are going to steal from me. That's it. Like, I have to accept that. Even though I think in my head it's wrong and I should fight against it, that's not pragmatic and it's not realistic. And it's more expensive than it's worth. So, you know, there's all sorts of little things like that in running your own business that, and by the way, if you work for somebody else and you're hearing all this crap, whenever you work for somebody else, if you've never been the boss or the business owner, You tend to not realize how much crap they shield you from. This is some of that crap. Like, if you just get a paycheck every month and they cover your benefits and everything, and that's it, you don't have to worry about like getting sued or anything like that, you're doing all right. Like, you have a pretty low stress level.
Yeah, I mean,
unless they're putting you on call 24 hours a day and promising you stock options to make up for it.
There's so much, like you're saying, there's so much behind the scenes that they are paying for. They're doing it just to write you out a paycheck. Costs them money just to get it written out and sent to you and put, you know, and then the taxes that they pay, you know, you look at your paycheck and you're like, what happened? Why am I paying all these taxes? Well, the company you work for is paying those too. Again, for every employee it has.
Oh yeah, and there's and more. Workers' comp, there's unemployment. Oh,
it's the worst.
And there's all the, you know, the weird New York transit tax. Like, lots of places have weird little taxes like that that everyone has to pay. And traditionally, when you raise taxes on businesses, there's less voter outrage. And so there's all sorts of weird little taxes that are put on businesses because it's easier than raising taxes on employees.
Right.
So it's just, there's a lot of pluses and minuses on both sides of being the boss. Like, when you're not the boss, you are really protected from a lot. You're shielded from all those problems. Ideally, you know, unless the boss is doing their job really badly. But when you are the boss, you can choose what to do. You know, you direct the company. You also tend to make more money, but you're taking more risk almost always. And you also have weird little legal things that you have to abide by and legal responsibilities. It's really weird. And I know very little about that because I've never been a boss of any full-time employees. Like, I've been the boss of my own company and I deal with contractors, but I've never been like a person's boss full-time. So I don't know. I kind of hope to do that sometime. I would like to know what that's like. I don't know where I would do that exactly, but
it'd be great if you could if you could test that out first before you actually have to do it.
Yeah,
but that doesn't work that way.
I guess. Maybe that's what like a temporary employee is for, right? Is that why everyone hires interns?
That's why they get interns, because at the end of the semester, the intern has to go somewhere else.
Yeah, like, interns are just time bomb jobs.
Yeah, and interns are great.
Oh, that's another thing too. If you're not getting paid as an intern, you're being ripped off.
Oh yeah, you got to pay interns, but they're great because they really typically they want to work, they want to get the experience, they do a good job, and then when you really start to rely on them, then they have to leave.
Got a question from the chat room from Callie Bellis. Marco, have you been a line manager? I have no idea what a line manager.
Line manager is where
it sounds like a restaurant job.
It is. It's where you're at a restaurant. And you're the one that calls out the order, you know, two chicken soups, one gumbo, one, you know, you like call the thing out, and then you get the people to, you know, then they have to, you know, two fries, burgers, and they send them down and you expedite them.
Oh, okay.
That's what that is.
The only job I ever had in a restaurant in a traditional style restaurant was I was a busboy. I worked at a Brugger's, but that's, I don't think,
Brugger's bagels
as a restaurant. Yeah. That's like a separate kind of thing. I was a sandwich artist there.
Nice.
And that's the Subway thing. I know Brugger's was actually really fun to work for, because like it is very satisfying. It, you know, if you're a high school kid and you have to wake up at 5 a.m. on Saturday to go to work, that kind of sucks. But it's a little bit nicer when you get there and you can bake your own breakfast.
Nice.
It's very satisfying. So,
Calibellis clarified to say they meant a manager of people.
One step up from the grunts.
Yeah.
No, I've never had the authority in any of my jobs to tell somebody what to do and they had to listen.
It seems really cool. Like, I always thought that would be the coolest thing in the world. Like, my goal for the first, I don't know how many years until I was in this position, was always like, I really want to have a cool team of people and be the boss. And yeah, and then I did it and I realized that how incredibly challenging, in ways I was totally unprepared for, that job actually was. And once you're in that kind of a role, it's really, especially when you're like trying to get other jobs or whatever, like they see that you have had that experience, and unless you like hide it, then mm-hmm. they want you to do it more. They want you to keep doing it.
So you should go somewhere and be a secret manager.
Well, like my father-in-law, for the longest time, he works at a large paper in
a viral job
in Florida. And for the longest time, you know, they would want him to step up into this specific kind of management role. And he was quite content to not have direct reports and not have people working for him. And I asked him, I'm like, yeah, why? And he's like, I've seen the managers. They are the most stressed out, awful, you know, they lead these terrible, miserable work days. He's like, I make as much as them almost, and I don't have to worry at 5 p.m. I'm done. You know, there's something to be said. I remember the first job that I had after I came from that kind of a role where I didn't have that. It was just like a relief. It's like, wow, nobody needs anything from me right now. Like, I get to ask somebody else when I need something. It was great. It was less pressure. Let's do our second sponsor, MailChimp.com. Love these guys. I figured, you know what? Start the new year out with MailChimp. That's my whole 2012. I'm going to call this the year that we get serious about MailChimp.
But that isn't a New Year's resolution, right?
Nope.
Don't tell Merlin.
Nope.
All right.
MailChimp, what is it? You do newsletters. You share them with people. How do you do it? On social networks. You integrate with services you already use, and you can track the results. This is the main thing. People don't get this. You want to know how many people opened that newsletter that is sent out. Who opened them? Why didn't they open them? When did they open? All of this information is tracked. You can look at this, and this is how you measure the performance. People act like newsletters like are old school. They're not. Newsletters are huge. And people make tons of money doing newsletters. Did you know that?
Yeah, that's one of those things. It's like stumble upon. It's like this tremendous economic force on the internet that most geeks don't know about. Same thing. Yeah, newsletters are one of those things for sure. Like I'm not familiar with this world at all, but I know that it's a lot bigger than I think it is. And
right.
People make a lot of money sending out newsletters.
Like every time I hear, I'll talk to somebody, I'm like, what do you do? Oh, I do a newsletter. Like, really? Yeah, what else do you do? No, I just do the newsletter. Like, how
does
often?
Does it come with a free fax every week?
It's like, no, and these are people, a lot of the people that do it is, you know, think about what you do. You know a lot about the industry. I don't just mean you, Marco, I mean the listeners. You know a lot about the industry you're in. You know a lot about what you do. There are people who would love to know what you know. You're paying attention to stuff. You're reading the news. You're learning new things. You can share that on newsletter and very easily. I'm not saying you got to charge people for this. You can. But I'm just saying, you know, newsletters are an amazing way for people to get information. And it's also a great way for you to spread the word about your company. When we announce the shirts, guess what? We do it for the newsletter people first. They get a discount code. They pay less. It might not be a lot less. It might be a couple. But so what? It's a couple bucks less. They pay less money and they get the same shirt because they're on the newsletter. We love them. And we use MailChimp for that. So go to MailChimp.com. Sign up 12,000 emails a month, every month for free forever. And year of MailChimp. That's what I'm calling 2012.
Makes sense.
Why not? So, we had a lot of email, though.
We do get a lot of email.
Well, we did.
Was there another one that you wanted to address?
Let me see here. I'm just going through some notes that I had because we did get a lot. And I actually think there was about 60. Since the last show, maybe
that many?
I don't know if there's.
It did seem like a lot.
There's a lot, though. Some are coming in even as we speak.
Well, in the meantime, while you're looking that up,
yeah,
since we have a few more minutes,
yeah.
I think I'm going to change the way I store images offline. I think I mentioned this for a second and a half last show because I was just playing with it then. But I think I'm going to ship this. Basically, Instapaper has a problem displaying the offline images when you are behind a VPN or a proxy.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why is partially because the way I do it is ridiculously convoluted and partially because there's a bug in iOS. The bug in iOS is that when you have, I assume this is a bug, when you have a URL or you know just any kind of connection reference to a localhost URL, If you have a VPN or proxy configured, it won't work because it'll direct the localhost request through that proxy, which the proxy can't reach localhost, or you know it has the wrong reference for it. So those requests won't work. And the symptom in Instapaper was that if you're using a VPN or proxy, images wouldn't work. The reason why is because the way I was displaying images before is by rewriting all image reference URLs to a localhost URL on a crazy high-numbered port and serving them from a built-in web server included in my app. That is ridiculous. And I for a while, this was the only good way I could think of to serve images offline. Because the problem is, there's a few other ways you can do it. One of them is with data URLs. So if you Base64 encode the image data and make a data URL, you can just convert all the images to that. And in older versions of Instapaper, I think before version 2.0, that's how I did it. I just did everything with data URLs. The problem with that is mobile Safari is not that great about performance when rendering those or memory management. And so, especially on the older hardware that had only the 128 megs of RAM, I would frequently crash the WebKit component and therefore crash my app by loading just too many images in data URLs. So that was not a great solution. So I switched in around 2.0 to this local web server method, which is ridiculous. And it turned out it worked really well. It's ridiculously fast. I had no idea it was this fast, but it really, I was shocked the first time I ran it on the device because I thought I was just experimenting. I'm like, this probably won't work or this will probably be too slow to use, but let's give it a try anyway. And sure enough, it worked very, very well. I did that for a while, but then I ran into this proxy bug. The people from Onavo emailed me about it because they run some kind of VPN or proxy service, and their users were complaining it wasn't working with Instapaper. So this is, and they refer me to this blog post somewhere that I've since lost. But it turns out that and file URLs. The reason I didn't use file URLs before, you know, you can do file colon triple slash
right,
path,
right?
Is that usually they don't work. That problem number one was usually don't work. Problem number two is that I used to store all the URLs in a database, so they didn't even have individual files for me to reference. In recent versions of Instapaper, I've changed that. I think in version, I know at least in 4.0, it might. I think even before, I think in one of the three, I think version 3.1.3, I might have changed that. So it was sometime recently I changed that everything now has an individual file. And that's for lots of reasons, even though it now takes longer to clear articles out because I have to delete every file. But anyway, so file URLs don't work if you need to give them a path. Any path will fail, except maybe relative paths might work. But you cannot use an absolute path in a file URL. It simply will not work. And file URLs also won't work if you don't set the base URL properly when setting up the web view. And I'll have to find this blog post and link to it. Basically, when you load a URL into UI web view, there's a base URL parameter that you can set. And if you use NSURL to make a file URL, and I think it's something along the lines of like URL with local path, blah, 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 something like that. If you do all that and give the path of your of all your files, then pathless file references will work.
Wow. Nailed it.
And yeah, and I think this might this might not work before iOS 4. That's all I'm only testing it on 4 and up. Thank God that's all I have to support right now. But I'm so happy. I can't wait until I can drop even 4 support and just use 5. But the time has not come for that yet. But so now I'm going to switch to that method, which does work in these weird VPN setups because no connection is even made, even localhost. So that's developer related. That only took like 7 minutes.
Not bad.
So they can't accuse me of being off topic too much this episode, even though we were.
You know, I did find the email that I wanted to bring up, but I realize now that it is potentially a longer discussion. So I will just note it for perhaps the next show if there's time.
Okay, that sounds good.
Is that okay? Because I don't want to rush through it.
Actually,
I think
there's a good follow up from McFat in the chat room. Marco, when you say
fat with a PH though.
Yeah. McPahat. Or McPhat. Marco, when you save a page for offline, do you grab all the CSS as separate files as well? Good question. Right now, I don't store CSS. The current version of Instapaper does not store the full page offline. It only stores the text version that the servers generate, which has all custom CSS that I put in there. So it's all I'm saving now is the main article HTML. So technically, the answer is no. But I used to do that. Back in versions of Instapaper before, I think before 2.0 also, I used to store what I called the graphical mode, which was just the entire page, full page for offline use. And I'm pretty sure this is how all the other offline page saving, like there's one called offline pages, and there's like a bunch of other like offline page saving things where like that's all they do, or that's the primary thing they do. And I think this is how they work. On full WebKit, mobile. The reason why I had to do all that crazy stuff with offline images is that, as any iOS developer knows, when you get that callback that says, "Should I load?" You know, the browser wants to load this resource. You know, should we permit it? And you can only respond yes or no. You can't modify the resource. So, like, you get as in that callback, you get the request. So you can say, "Oh, you know, here's the request. Here's the URL it's looking at, etc." But you can't. You can't respond with what the contents of that request should be. All you can do is prevent it from happening or permit it to happen. And there, you could even do a data URL hack there where you could say, when you get that request, reject it, but then do a JavaScript replacement using a data URL of the image and everything. I think you can do that, but I never tried that because I suspect that'll have all the exact same performance problems that I had when using data URLs the first time. So anyway... back to the McPhat question about offline CSS. I had this procedure that I used. I did it server side, although you can do it anywhere. That just stepped through a page and just any external CSS, it would just fetch it, and it would inline all of it right there. So because CSS does, you know, you don't have to keep them in separate files. You can inline it all. So the earlier version of Instapaper that did support offline graphical mode of the full layout,
right?
That's how I did it. I just inlined everything, like you, and it's pretty straightforward. Like I don't know if there's any good way to do it. It's just you know, you download the page and any linked CSS file, you download that, and then you step through any import statements in that, and you download those, and you put them all in the right order so they override each other properly. And that's it. And if you want to support JavaScript, it's a lot harder because there's all sorts of weird things that, you know, like it's hard to know that you have all the JavaScript. So I just didn't support JavaScript. There was really no reason for it in the context of my app anyway. But you can do a similar kind of thing with JavaScript if you want to. But anyway, that's how I did that. And I'm curious to know, because on desktop WebKit development, they have support for the web archive format. And they also have support for modifying URL requests, so you don't have to do my crazy image hack. Mm. But all of that, as far as I know, is either private or missing on iOS. So you don't have access to any of those things. But anyway, if anybody has any ideas on other ways that might be better, other ways to both capture and then reserve content offline from web pages that I'm not thinking of that'll work on iOS, I'd love to hear them, and we can talk about them in the next show. But I'm pretty sure that's pretty much all of them.
We've got a lot to talk about in the next show already.
We do. Oh yeah, that email. That's the whole show. We love
that.
Email.
Could be any. Could be. So if you want to email us, you can go to 5x5.tv/contact. You pick build and analyze from the list. We will receive your email and we will read it. You can also rate the show on iTunes. Start the year out right. Rate the show if you like it. How do you do that? You just go to iTunes, find, build, and analyze by searching for it or search for 5x5. Rate the show.
I'm not allowed to laugh anymore on the show.
Oh, you're not?
No, because that parody of 5x5.
Oh, that was great.
Apparently, I laugh too much at everything. So I'm going to stop laughing during the show. There will be no more humorous content, and I will no longer laugh.
I already lost the link for that. That was good.
And the problem is the rest of them are really funny.
They're all funny.
Nah, mine wasn't funny. There's no humor in this show anymore. That's it. No more laughing.
I want to read that. Hang on. Where was this thing? Do you have a link still?
I don't know. I know it was a Tumblr post, but I don't know where.
I bet you do.
I really don't.
I'll try and find it. I retweeted it, but then I retweet a lot of things. Well, you can follow Marco on Twitter, Marco Arment. There is a T at the end of that. I'm Dan Benjamin on Twitter. We love you. Thank you for bringing in the new year with us. And you can tune in next week live by going to 5x5.tv/live. We post when we are now. We've been recording at a different time because of a variety of reasons. But my
fault. Well, you can say it. It's okay.
Well, I mean, it's not just one thing. You've got construction and there's other things going on.
Construction, family plans, travel around the holidays. It's really fun.
Yeah. So we may keep this different time. We may keep the different day. But you can find that out by just going to 5x5.tv/schedule. And there's a schedule there. You can see it. You can subscribe to it. And when we know that when we're going to record, we change when it's on there. Keep up to date. So thanks for tuning in. And Marco, have a good week.
You too.
Congratulations again.
Thank you.